From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. According to recent studies, nearly half of the American public attends a church or synagogue every week. Where are the origins of this devotion, and how do American religious belief and practice manifest themselves today? Soundings put those questions to two recent visitors at the National Humanities Center, Martin Marty of the University of Chicago and James Wall, editor of Christian Century magazine. First on this edition of Soundings, a conversation with Martin Marty about his new book, entitled Pilgrims in Their Own Land, 500 Years of Religion in America. Following that discussion, a conversation with James Wall of Christian Century magazine. Martin Marty is a trustee of the National Humanities Center. He's the author of numerous books, including Righteous Empire, which won the National Book Award in 1972. According to Martin Marty, religion in America has always been a main engine of social change, measurable by the impact and survival of religion in communal rather than individual or private terms. Martin Marty, you are a professor of the history of modern Christianity at the University of Chicago. You've written a book called Pilgrims in Their Own Land, and the subtitle is 500 Years of Religion in America. Why should Americans regard themselves as pilgrims in their own land when it comes to religion? Why did you pick that title, for instance?
I picked that title partly because it relates to one of the great myths or stories or symbols of all American life. If there was any picture that made it on the calendars or the schoolhouse walls to symbolize pioneering American religion, it was the people we called the Pilgrims in New England. And while very few of us actually claim descent from them, we have always modeled a lot of what we do around the image of what they represented. Mm-hmm. The fundamental fact about us is that, except for the Native Americans, everyone can trace when we got here.
Yeah.
We are all pilgrims. We all made a move, and we remain restless. I also push the story back not only to the Native American, but beyond the Pilgrims and the Puritans and the Anglicans that made up the 13 colonies. If you say America, you have to begin with the Spanish in the Southwest and Southeast and the French in the Northeast in what became Canada and the Northeast of the U.S. And that was usually seen, because of the South American pattern, as merely the conquistadores model that came as conquerors. But they sure brought a lot of chaplains along. I don't want to make them out to be modern civil libertarians or modern historians of religion who see everything equal, anything but that. But they were humanizing, cushioning people. And they had visions all the way back to Columbus himself. He was a very interesting man, and he had a kind of a messianic interpretation. He read himself into the plot of the Bible. He was to be the one who'd extend the true faith. And certainly he wanted gold for Spain, but he also really believed that he could help extend the Crusades, he could extend the scope of the empire, and he was a very informed believer. He didn't need a priest on his voyages. He could run everything but the Mass himself.
Martin Marty, our topic is religion in America. You've written a book with the subtitle 500 Years of Religion in America. As you look back on this this rather grand landscape, are there other names or, be anecdotal for me, stories that come to mind that illustrate this this pilgrimage that you have written about?
Well, let's play a game and say let's chip a Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
My first face or head would be Jonathan Edwards.
Now this is a man who lived in the 18th century.
18th century. His prime is the mid-18th century. Spends his life mainly in a little town of Northampton, and goes spends his last years with the Stockbridge Indians. And then they made him president of what became Princeton, and so he died.
But you're not you're not suggesting that killed him.
That's an anecdote. All right. Now, just a quick sample of this.
Okay.
Because I think he's really miscast by most Americans who somewhere in humanities in high school or college have read one of his sermons about sinners in the hands of an angry God.
Oh, and it's a dark, gloomy picture.
You bet. He has us suspended like the spider over the flame.
Right.
Well, he believed those things, but he also did a lot of other things, and fundamentally he was optimistic about the universe and America. I think John F. Kennedy once said, when he had the East Room of the White House full of Nobel Prize winners, he said, "This is the most brain power in this room since Thomas Jefferson sat here alone."
Right.
When I see religious scholars gathered today, I keep thinking that's the best concentration of brain power since Edwards was in his little 4-foot by 6-foot cabin writing on freedom of the will.
Well, I remember, just parenthetically, Martin Marty, hearing somebody say that Jonathan Edwards was the last man in the modern world, however you care to define that, for whom there was no conflict between science and religion. It was a unified cosmos.
Right. Well, we shouldn't make him out to be fully modern, but we should notice this. He believed that the two sides of life that were then in contention and still are, what he called reason and the affections, the passions, and so on, that these could not finally be in contradiction because they're both grounded in that great being, being itself, God. Later on, revivalists took an anti-rational path, and academics took an anti-passion path, they thought, and we took two different paths. But for the last time, on a grand scale, he was there. All right, let's put another name on this Mount Rushmore. There are a lot of chances, but let's give equal time now to Catholics.
Okay.
And I would choose James Cardinal Gibbons,
who lived
Baltimore,
roughly.
Late 19th century, lived right down into World War I times. Very crucial moment, because when he was a young, he was in the funeral cortege in Baltimore for Abraham Lincoln as a young seminarian or priest, and then he lived beyond into World War I. These are the years when Catholicism came from being a little outsider church to being by far the largest single church in America, and it still had outsider status. It had all these new immigrants and all that, and he had to prove to them that they were really American, and he had to prove to America that Catholics really belonged. He was a wheeler dealer in a creative way. He was a subtle administrator, not a deep theologian, but a leader of people, and he knew how to work Rome against itself. He knew how to gather others in the rivalry of Catholicism, and he made it belong more than anyone else. Now, I could take interesting figures. Mount Rushmore is a little too small for all of them. I suppose I would need figures like Mary Baker Eddy and Joseph Smith to show what's American about American religion, because those two people, better than anyone else, founders in the late 19th century of Christian Science and in the early century of the Latter-day Saints, typify the many scores of people in America who looked out at the religious landscape and didn't see anything filling a certain set of needs and had a revelation or a vision or an enlightenment of their own and started something new. But the remarkable thing the Americans did is, while in Europe, with support of the state, with old monuments and habits, with a privileged religion, it died progressively. In America, this lively mix, if High Anglicanism didn't do it for you, shouting baptism could do it for you. And if that didn't do it, there were the Lutherans, and they could take care of you on these needs. But if not that, there were the Unitarians. That's the image I have of the Pilgrims. The Americans are restless. We're always thinking there's a better land and a better place and a better future. And religion is a main motivator. And again, I keep insisting the surprise is that it's around at all for a nation born in the 18th century when it started getting in trouble in its homelands.
Martin Marty, we're talking about religion in America. You've written a book called Pilgrims in Their Own Land, 500 Years of Religion in America. Let me put a really big one on the table here. Tell me about the Bible. What do Americans think about the Bible? We have people who say this is the very literal word of God, the words of Jesus Christ. Then we have the scholars who come along and say, now, wait a minute, you know, you're forgetting all these languages and translations. I realize that this is a problem today. Should it be such a big deal?
Oh, yes, it should. It's very creative. And again, at a humanities center, we should face these issues because we're asking, what does an ancient text do? I once wrote an essay on America having the Bible as its iconic book. It's its icon. That is, many people worship the physical object of the Bible. We do amazing things with it. It's our bestseller, and we leather bind it, and we use more gold on its spine, and we know which is the middle verse of the Bible. There are trivia games based on it.
Sure.
It's our icon, and people who can't have idols and images make an icon out of it. And it's also a marvelous judge. I spent time in Japan last year, and one thing they envy is that our civil religion, because of its biblical note, always has what they call transcendent justice. That is, about the time you get everything put together, God, through the prophets or the psalmist, says that the God in the heavens shall laugh at human pretension. It's a good judge of the nation. I think what we have to remember fundamentally about that library called the Bible is that it's an historical book. It's a narrative. It tells how the God of Israel, and in the New Testament for Christians, the God of Jesus Christ, deals with a people.
Mm-hmm. But somehow or other, to treat it as history, and we could insert the word mere history, somehow or other that leaves a lot of people very uncomfortable. What's the problem here, Marty? Is it that these people are not comfortable with themselves, or are they in fact really trying to impose something on the rest of us?
I wouldn't. You treat it either as mere history.
Uh-huh.
I would say it's set aside for the believing community the way a constitution is set aside for the national community. It's our genetic programming. It's what uh-huh. gives us life. It is, in my tradition's way of putting it, and I like it, it's the only source and norm of authority mm-hmm. For the teachings of a body, if you do mm-hmm. believe in it. I'm ready for all that. I think where you get the rigid use is people who, seeing all the terrors of the modern world, need a very firm authority.
Mm-hmm.
They feel as quicksand out there. And when they can wave the book and say, the Bible says, overlooking the fact the Bible says a lot of other things too, it's reassuring to people. It gives people identity, authority, experience, and that's mm-hmm. what they've always, pilgrims in America have always been looking for, those mm-hmm. three things,
mm-hmm.
and they still do. But I think that, and certainly a lot of people who believe in that kind of literalism have led very productive citizen lives, and I might trust a lot more of them to buy my used car from than others. But a lot of other people who believe these things are out to do me in.
Mm-hmm.
They often persecute if they can. They're often very prejudiced, and I think therefore, we have to see the Bible as a text that's unfinished, that its future is ahead of it. We're in the plot. And the believer in the God of the Bible is believing in a God who takes a risk on mm-hmm. an unfinished story. But what the God of the Bible is the power of the future.
Mm-hmm.
For the Jews in Jeremiah, God turns to them to give them a future and a hope. That's what American pilgrims are always acting with. For Christians, Jesus Christ is the power of the new creation. If you believe that, then it's ahead. And we all know with any text, everyone who reads it in a new situation, in a new circumstance, is hearing it in a fresh way, and they become a part of the plot. And again, people like Martin Luther King, what did he do? He said, here, you say it is written. He didn't say, but I say unto you. He said, it is written, and I insist.
Uh-huh.
He didn't mean go back to the Bible. He meant take the momentum of the Bible and bring its justice and mercy into mm-hmm. the world ahead of him.
Marty, let's conclude our conversation. We're talking about your book, Pilgrims in Their Own Land, 500 Years of Religion in America. Maybe you've already answered this final question for me. How would you characterize the state of religion in America in the latter part of the 20th century? Is it healthy?
I would say that there were never any good old days.
Hmm.
Most people think we are always in decline. If you take participation in religion, we're 6, 8, 10 times better off than they were in the founding fathers' era.
Hmm.
6, 8, 10, 20% then, and 40, 50, 60% now. So we haven't been in decline in that sense. We are always finding new problems and new challenges, and you might say privatization might be a new challenge now. Pluralism is a real challenge for religion, but I still wouldn't trade it for anywhere else. I think that one thing that the simplest believers and unbelievers and Americans have done is rather joyfully accepted the gift of modernity that says you're free. You're mm-hmm. free to do it or not to do it. And they'd rather take the burdens of being very busy fabricating a faith and a worldview and a way of life than they would saying, oh, the oppressor is landing on us with certain things we have to believe and do. Institutions have it hard. In the high-rise, long weekend culture, it's not easy to run a synagogue or a church.
Right.
But there are a couple hundred thousand vital congregations.
Mm-hmm.
There are amazing numbers of people who, in quiet, unnoticed ways, reorganize their lives in the light of it. There are vitalities in the social movements of the day, like them or not, the sanctuary movement, the boat people care. One after another of these things are people motivated by their religious norms. Religious conservatives obviously are. We haven't talked much about them, but they are too. And so sometimes religion only leads to prejudice and heating up the atmosphere. But I think that may be that the eyes of perception we use often notice only the conflictual level, and very often the deepest bonds of concord we have also rise out of our religious ethos.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Marty is a professor at the University of Chicago. His latest book is Pilgrims in Their Own Land, 500 Years of Religion in America. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Soundings on Religion in America continues now with a discussion with another recent visitor at the National Humanities Center. Here is James Wall, editor of the Christian Century magazine. I asked James Wall to comment on the state of belief in American culture today.
The state of belief at this time in mid-1980s is that there is an intense interest in religion as a way of dealing with one's personal life and as a way of confronting the issues in public life.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've gone through a period of time when the American public felt uneasy about relating religion to public life. But I believe that in the 1980s, what we're seeing is a willingness to think of religion as something that has something to contribute to decision-making and to ethical decisions and to problems. In the traditional sense, people are still nervous if you say, I've got a religious answer to medical ethics, or I've got a religious answer to politics. But at the heart of the American system has always been this notion that there is what de Tocqueville called habits of the heart, title of a new book that's dealing with that subject, namely the moral character of the country. And religion, obviously, contributed, indeed was the foundation of that moral character of the country.
Jim Wall, we're talking about religion in America, the state of belief, your views from your vantage point as editor of the Christian Century. Tell me about how do you see church-state today? There's a downside, there's an upside. Some people are going to use it to certain advantages and political or ideological ends. Do we need to worry about people who want to break down the lines between church and state?
Of course, the whole concept of church and state is the First Amendment issue. And that amendment makes it clear that there will be no official establishment of religion in this democracy.
Do you think that that's what some of the names Falwell, for instance, Jimmy Swaggart, people like that, is that what they're after?
It's hard to analyze their ultimate motives. One could see in some of the things they say a desire for a Christian culture, which it seems to me to impact more on the American cultural patterns than it does the establishment of an official church religion, a state, sorry, the establishment of an official state religion.
Right.
But yes, they seem to be skirting closely to the edge of affecting their First Amendment separation. But the other side of the First Amendment was that you shall have the right to be freely pursue your religious thought. So there are two things involved.
Or lack of religious thought.
Or being a non-believer in terms of traditional religions.
Let me ask you a question that sort of looks in at the churches and looks out at their effects on public and private life. And give you a couple of examples. The Catholic Church says no birth control. The Mormon Church says no ERA. Do you think that's right for churches to take stands, whether they are official or not?
I think it's wrong for the churches to stay out of those matters.
Yes.
I think there's no question about what. If you are concerned about how people live in society,
you've got to say something
about it.
Okay.
No question about it. You happen to mention two churches that are saying things I don't necessarily agree with, but my church said a great deal about the Vietnam War and said a great deal about civil rights. And I think helped lead the country in a good direction. Jerry Falwell is saying something about ERA, for example, and abortion today that I don't like. But that's absolutely correct. He has every right to do that. And I think in a democracy, so long as we maintain a tolerance for one another's viewpoint, so long as the tone of the debate is at least within the bounds of democratic discussion, and not intimidation. Those are the rules I think we ought to emphasize, then every religious group should feel free to go at it and trying mm-hmm. to influence what happens.
Jim Wald, you're editor of Christian Century Magazine. Our topic is religion in America. What kinds of religious models would you say that people in the United States have today? We look about. We've had, on the downside, we've had cabinet secretaries who have been indicted. We went through the whole Watergate mess, which certainly underscored moral issues in public and private conduct. Do you take this sort of thing into account as you present religion to your readers?
You know, one of the problems in models or heroes to look to for guidance is that we are so conditioned by the media-saturated society we live in.
Uh-huh.
Richard Schickel has a provocative new book out on the celebrity in society today. Mm-hmm. And his point is so well made that television creates celebrities without any substance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People are famous simply because their faces are seen on television time and time again, not
sure.
because they have any substance.
Sure, following up Mr. Boorstin's differentiation between the hero and the celebrity, mm-hmm. People who are known for being known.
But without much substance. And
yeah.
so it's hard to follow a model of that sort. It's hard for your life to be patterned after Johnny Carson's life.
So are you saying that that doesn't really affect religious practice and belief?
I think it affects it in the sense that what we begin to think of, what the public generally begins to think of as what will motivate their decision-making isn't found in religious heroes,
uh-huh.
but is found in... I'm afraid, the success orientation of
mm-hmm.
celebrities.
Mm-hmm. Jim Wald, you're the editor of Christian Century Magazine. Our topic is religion in America. How would you characterize Americans' sense of their religious history? Here, I mean, this is almost like family. You know, you got to know your cousins. You got to
mm-hmm.
know what went on before you. Do Americans have a strong sense of religious history?
That's an interesting question because some people are eager to know their cousins and their grandparents and their great-grandparents. They want to know where they came from.
Right.
Others don't care. I'm afraid that in American life today, that sense of ecumenism, that caring about who we are in a larger religious family,
right.
is virtually non-existent.
Why is this? Is this a bad thing?
It is a bad thing, and it probably grows out of the intense individualism of American society.
Uh-huh.
The desire to find out what's in it for me,
yeah.
rather than to see the world as a community, a collection of communities, and the larger community, and the common good.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you're not interested in the common good or in a larger community, you tend not to be interested in the larger family. You're
uh-huh.
only interested in my personal individual benefit.
Mm-hmm. Jim Wallace put a further twist to that question. You're the editor of Christian Century, and our topic is religion in America. How would you characterize the status of relationships among and between American churches and groups and sects? Do they treat one another pretty well? Is it a sort of a hands-off sort of thing? How does all that work?
Oh, this probably varies from community to community, depending upon the neighborhoods that you live in.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was a pastor of a church in Georgia some years ago, we had very good relations between the major churches of that community, which were Methodist and Baptist, and held joint services and the like. Other communities where the sense of neighborliness is not as strong may have less of this,
mm-hmm.
but there isn't a lot of intense loyalty to one's own immediate group. One's own tribe, as Martin Marty has used the term.
Right.
Sometimes that tribalism means you turn in on yourself. It may have a lot to do with how secure you feel about your own tribe.
Mm-hmm.
If you're secure in your own tribe, your own self, then you're better off. You feel more like relating to others. If you're a little insecure, then you're more likely to be inward-looking.
Or picking on the other guy.
Or not wanting to deal with the other guy.
Right. Jim Wald, you're the editor of the Christian Century Magazine. How do you think religion, what kind of treatment does it get in American media? Radio and TV and newspapers? Is it healthy? Is it?
Well, you've touched a point at which I think we've got one of our greatest problems in American life today.
Now, what is this? The reporting of religious?
The reporting of religious development news. The failure of secular media. That is that part of media that has to do with television, radio, and newsprint magazines from really comprehending A, the institutional religious life of America, mm-hmm. and B, the theology that undergirds American thinking. I think we're beginning to see books and thinkers who are understanding this better, and in due time, this will infiltrate the academic institutions, will make itself known through the society so that the reporters of 20 years from now will be in a better position to understand religion, both mm-hmm. as a faith and as an institution. But the journalists of today in the 1980s came out of a period of time that was basically anti-religious, anti-pietistic, anti-faith. And so they have almost no understanding. And this is a great generalization, obviously. There mm-hmm. are exceptions. Mm-hmm. No understanding of institutional religion in American life or the meaning of faith in American life.
Jim Wald, you are the editor of Christian Century Magazine. Let's conclude our conversation about religion in America. What do you think are the most important religious issues facing American believers and American non-believers? Have I too cleanly categorized them? Am I leaving out groups there that you'd like to talk to or about?
I think that all Americans should be concerned with the issues that religious figures have highlighted for us in recent years. Whether they are concerned from a religious perspective or a non-religious perspective is their personal decision.
You mean Americans, not the leaders?
I mean the American public
right.
should be concerned with any issue that impacts upon how we live as a people.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the case of nuclear arms, how we no longer exist as a people. Yes, every subject should be under consideration by religious thinkers. I think my final bottom line point of view is that in order to deal with ourselves as a collection of people living within organizations and finally living under an organized government, we have to make decisions that are going to be influenced by how we feel about things from a moral point of view.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, whether that moral point of view is informed from religion or whether it's informed from my Aunt Susie's viewpoint, whatever.
Right.
We make decisions regarding everything that we do. We make decisions on the federal budget. We make decisions on how to spend the federal dollar based upon a moral point of view. And we need to be self-conscious about that moral point of view. I'm not talking about a purely Christian or Jewish or some other religion. I mean the moral foundation on which mm-hmm. this country was built, with certain values and certain commitment to justice and a commitment to freedom mm-hmm. and liberty, all of that, are moral judgments. And those judgments must be employed in all the decisions that we make.
James Wall is the editor of Christian Century Magazine. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Religion in America, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, two conversations about contemporary literary inquiry. The Soundings panelists will be Annette Kolodny of the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and George Steiner of the Universities of Geneva and Cambridge. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Listen to Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join me this week for the concluding segment in a series of conversations about religion and theology. The Soundings panelists will be Martin Marty of the University of Chicago and James Wall, editor of Christian Century magazine. What's the state of religious thinking and behavior in America? How have they evolved from colonial times? What's their relationship to important contemporary cultural and political questions? Religion in America. Some answers and insights this week on Soundings from the National Humanities Center on this station.